The Attorney General wishes to announce that the following program has been rated
liberal rubbish
by the Department of Justice.
All right, guard, begin the unnecessarily slow-moving dipping mechanism.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Isn't he simply adorable, Pop?
I told you, never trust a monkey!
Listen, you smell something?
Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
For God's sake, strap yourselves down!
Again, everybody, and welcome to yet another episode of the Cup of Joe Radio Show. I'm your humble host, Joe Vecchio. This is show number 15, and I'm going to try, even though I'm working, I'm going to try to do two shows a week at least, more if I can do them, and I've been thinking about maybe doing several shorter shows a week rather than one longer show. The last one was like 2 hours because I went on talking about these issues a lot longer than I really expected to, but you know, like I said last episode, that's the beauty of internet radio. I am not restricted by any kind of time limits whatsoever. I can speak as long as I damn well please. And I hope everybody's having a good evening. Before I do anything else, I want to mention two things. First, I have a... Pardon me here. I'm just getting settled in. Gotta get settled in. I want to do two things. First, I want to have a message to my pal Bart Cop. Now, I'm a big fan of BartCop.com. He's been around for, God, about 4 or 5 years at least, bashing the bushes, laying down the hammer, as he calls it. And he, of course, does his own radio show, which is a really cool radio show. I highly recommend those of you who can afford it to subscribe so you can listen to his show. It's a very good show. But, dude, I got news for you, man. You are, like, being totally ripped off. I have been reading your site, and you have been talking about the amount of spending that you're doing on computer equipment. And what is he, like $3,600 you just laid out for a new Mac computer? Dude, whoever's telling you to do this, and I know you're not a tech person, okay, but you really need to take a look at this because you've been spending a lot of money on stuff that you probably don't need to. You've apparently got like 3 studios now. Slow down, man. You're unemployed. I know you're getting money from the site, but you can't count on that stuff forever. Save some money. You can do the radio show. I do this radio show on nothing. What did I pay? Okay, is it $30 for the microphone? And like, I think I paid like $20 on the little mixer and Acoustica, which wasn't anything at all. And the computer is just a real cheap computer. It's not the greatest computer in the world. It's a very nice one to have because it's nice just to have a computer, period. And I thank Eric again for that. But the point is, whoever is informing you that you need this and you need this, they're either lying or they're just trying to take advantage of you, dude. You know. So if you're listening to this, I don't know if you listen to my show. I know you're aware of it to a certain extent, and I know you're a busy guy. But just letting you know, man, there's no way you should be spending that amount of money to put a show together when I can do the same thing for, God, probably a 20th of what you're doing. So I know you, like I said, I know you're not a tech person. I'm not really that much of a tech person either. I'm really more good at running programs. But, man, you're getting ripped off. But I just want to let you know, this is spoken out of love because I love you, man. I think you're doing a great job. Keep the hammer going and all that, you know. But don't let other people take advantage of you like that. Okay, happier news. I got an email from my sister, Toni, very nice lady who lives in New York City, and she got engaged last week, so I want to say congratulations to her and to her fiancé, Billy. Billy is a great guy. Let me tell you, sir, I only met Billy once. And when my wife and I went up to New York City last May to basically because we had some extra money from the income tax, and my wife, Kathy, had never been to New York, so, or at least she hadn't been since she was a very little kid, and she had always wanted to go back there. So I said, we're doing this, and I don't care how broke we are. And we stayed with Tony, who was great to let us stay at her place, even though she was upset that we didn't have that much money to do around with. And to be fair, we actually had more than we had less than we expected to have, because there were some unexpected medical problems that came up just before our trip. But anyway, we went down. You know, we met Billy for the first time. He met us at the airport, and he was a really great guy. One of those guys that people just like being around. And we were driving back, you know, from the airport and stuff like that. And then later on during the trip, we just all went down to Times Square. And I hadn't been down to Times Square in ages, and another day. And Billy is just cracking people up walking down the street. There were some Hare Krishnas there, and they were singing, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And he starts going, cha-na-na-na, cha-na-na-na, hey, 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 good. And it was funny because the two songs mixed. I know I sing them badly, but the two songs mixed together, and it was so funny. And then he gets out. We were crossing the street, and just like in the movie Midnight Cowboy, there was like a car pulling up, and he came a little too close, and Billy's banging on, hey, I'm walking here, just like Fatso Rizzo in the movie Midnight Cowboy. He's a really, really great guy. He's one of those people that people really do like to be around. And I'm looking forward to this wedding, which will probably be in about 6 months or so, I would imagine. It takes a while to plan all this stuff. It may happen in New York. It may happen in Florida. We'll see what happens. But congratulations to my sister, and many, many years of happiness to you and your new husband. Okay, what's been going on? You know, we had actually a rather quiet day. We've had a couple of quiet days at work these last 2 days, except for a couple little spurts where they've been really hanging parts like crazy. Now, for those of you who haven't listened to the show before, I work in a manufacturing job. I work for a company called Siemens, and basically they manufacture circuit boxes, large and small, various sizes. They get sold. A lot of them get sold in a Home Depot. And all these boxes, whenever they make them, they're made out of galvanized steel, and they have to be painted. And how they get painted is that there's this big overhead conveyor belt with hanging hooks, where when the parts are made, the hooks are hung on there by people hanging them. And my job is to take them off after they're gone through the whole painting process. And they've only had a couple of people hanging this last couple of days. But we had a meeting, and I mentioned in my last show, we had a meeting of all the the production staff at that shift. And it was about 20 of us at the meeting, and mostly it just turned into a big bitch fest against the supervisor. And, of course, you know, my supervisor, man, I could go on and on. He's just not a good supervisor. I'm sure a lot of you have supervisors who are like that. They don't really know what they're doing. In fact, they are – sometimes they take away from the job. They don't help the situation. They make things worse. And they spend most of their time just watching people, you know, rather than doing – you know, the job of a supervisor, which is making sure everything runs smoothly. Their job isn't just to, you know, to punish employees who aren't doing the work that they want them to do. But anyway, it's ever since that meeting, it's been relatively quiet as far as the types of parts. Because usually they have three people over there hanging parts, and there's only two of us right now who are taking them off the line. And it is very difficult. It's more difficult to take stuff off the line than it is to hang it. Mostly because that line does not stop. I mean, we can manually stop it, but they hate it when we do that. Oh, then we have to do that every now and then. Not so much because they're overstacking it, but because there's not a place to put some of the parts sometimes. But sometimes when you get three people out there and there's only two people taking it off, they can just hang so much stuff, we simply don't have time. And it's more difficult to take the stuff off the line because they have to be stacked properly. They can't just reach in a basket like they can hang it. I mean, grab it and stick it on a hook. Even though hanging is tough work, too, because it's a lot of lifting, and sometimes they have some fairly heavy boxes. But with three of them over there, two of us can't always keep up. And, of course, when we can't take breaks at the same time, because you got to have somebody on the line, and if there's only one person on there and they got two people hanging, because you know it goes on a long way, but basically we can get overwhelmed. We did have a third guy that was over there. But what was interesting is that while that third guy was over there, they were very often, in fact, the last 3 weeks until recently, they had been pulling me off of the line and sending me somewhere else. And I don't mind that every now and then, but 3 weeks in a row, it was getting very, very annoying, and especially since the other two guys were there. Now, we lost one guy because he got essentially a dream job for him. He's a football person. In fact, he used to play in the World League of American Football, the European League for the NFL. And he used to play for the Scottish Claymores, I think the name of the team is. And he got offered a position as an intern for an assistant coach for the Berlin Thunder of the NFL Europe. And he was very happy with that job. He called my coworker Dave on Sunday and saying he's loving it, even though he's working like 9:30 a.m. to like 11 p.m. But, you know, when you do something you love like that, it makes it all worth it, you know. But since he's been gone, they obviously have not been able to pull me off the line because you cannot leave one person on the line like that. It just doesn't work. Hang on, let me get a drink here. I got club soda here. You know, because I was having these, like, Big K. I don't know if you remember Big K. It's one of those really low, cheap sodas. And I was having trouble sleeping at night. And I usually drink, like, a Mountain Dew before I go to work. Or, you know, first thing as I go to work. Because the caffeine keeps me awake. And I was thinking that the Big K stuff is caffeine-free, but it was still keeping me awake, and it's probably because of the sugar. So I just got some sparkling water, and hopefully that will take care of that. But anyway, back to what I was talking about. Don't you love it when hosts ramble? Back to what I was talking about. We only had, you know, we only got Dave and I on the line, and we do a pretty good job, and it's been pretty quiet. And one of the other guys who's normally on the other, because there's more than one conveyor belt. They have another one, and that one is the other one is what they call the money line because more urgent parts tend to go out on that one. But they had a guy over there who hasn't been in the last couple of days, so they've had one less person hanging. So it's basically been two people hanging, two people taking off, and you know, we can generally handle that. So and that's really nice. I mean, the job keeps me busy. And we actually do a lot of production. We pull off anywhere from 7,000 to 10,000 parts a night. And that's a lot of parts. And some of these things are big, large boxes. Some of these things are smaller pieces of what we call trim. And we had, what was unusual today was that we had a lot of the same trim basically was run from just before lunchtime all the way to the end. And we have our lunch. I work from 3:30 to midnight, and my lunch is at like 8:15. So it's starting at around 7:30, I think, all the way through midnight when we had to leave. They were running the same one part, which is very unusual for them to run it that long. And there's speculation in my shop about what's going to happen to the plant. When we had that big meeting, they were talking about, you know, the plant is fighting for its survival. I'm skeptical of why they had this meeting, and I think I mentioned this in the last show. I think they honestly have already made the decision to close the plant down, and they're just trying to get as much production out of us as possible. I don't know this for a fact, but I suspect it because, you know, as I could tell any of you who are out there working for a living, that's just the sort of thing that these people do. And it's a shame that they're like that they can't be more honest and open, although to be fair, I can imagine that you wouldn't get a whole lot of work out of people if they knew for a fact that their plant was shutting down. So, but we're going to see what happened. I passed my 90-day probationary period yesterday, so I am now officially in there. In fact, I had my 90-day evaluation. It was funny because I had my 90-day evaluation last week, and I had my 45-day evaluation like a week before that. They were very late on the 45-day evaluation. And I am starting the process of joining the union. It's going to be International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, which is affiliated with the AFL-CIO. And hopefully within a couple of weeks, because I have to vote on it, and the union guy I talked to today said there didn't seem to be any problem with anything. They just got a formality to vote on it, and within a couple of weeks I will hopefully be a member of the union. My dad was a union man. He worked for the City of New York union. And the unions down here are not quite as strong, but I'll be proud to be a part of it. And I will have to have a disclaimer. In fact, I'll say it right now, that my views are my own and do not represent the viewpoint of the IBEW or the AFL-CIO or any other organized labor. They are simply my own. And there are going to be times when I disagree with the union. But that will be the disclaimer. I'm going to have to say that every week, and I'm going to have to put that up on the blog every week. And like that. Anyway, listen, I'm doing something different this week with the music. I decided just for S's and G's, I'm going to go ahead and play nothing but comedy music and comedy routines. So let's have some of that, and we'll be right back with the next segment of the Cup of Joe radio show.
To start, press any key. Where's the any key?
Welcome. You've got mail.
No.
All right, Mr. Burns.
Uh-oh.
All right, Mr. Burns.
Stop it.
All right, third judges.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Cheeseburger, onion rings, and a large orange drink, please. Did you get my order? A double cheeseburger, onion rings, and a large orange drink. No, I want a cheeseburger. A double cheeseburger. Onion rings and a large orange drink. a double cheeseburger. Say it. Double cheeseburger.
Mr. Wilson, you've done just fine on the Rorschach. Your papers are in good order. The file's fine. No difficulty with your motor skills. And I think you're probably pretty ready for this job. We got one more kind of psychological test we always do here. It's just a word association. I'll throw you out a few words. Anything that comes to your mind, just throw back at me, okay? It's just kind of an arbitrary thing. Like if I said dog, you'd say...
Tree.
Tree. Dog?
Tree.
Fast?
Slow.
Rain?
Snow.
White?
Black.
Bean?
Pod.
Negro?
Whitey.
Tar baby?
What'd you say?
Tar baby.
Au fait.
Colored.
Redneck.
Jungle bunny.
Peck of wood.
Burrhead.
Cracker.
Spear chucker.
White trash.
Jungle bunny.
Hunky.
Spade.
Hunky hunky.
Nigger.
Dead hunky.
I think you're qualified for this job. How about a starting salary of $5,000?
Your mama.
7,500 a year.
Your grandma.
$15,000, Mr. Wilson. You'll be the highest paid janitor in America. Just don't hurt me, please.
Okay.
Okay.
You want me to start now?
Oh, no. It's all right. I'll clean all this up. I'll take a couple of weeks off. You look tired.
Richard Pryor and Chevy Chase, word association from Saturday Night Live, first season. Saturday Night Live. In fact, I think it's like the third or fourth episode, and one of their funniest episodes and one of the funniest routines from that. Before that, we had Stevens and Goodnick with Fast Food, one of my favorite little things, and I'm constantly saying large orange drink, as my wife can testify to. And before that, we began the entire thing with the Simpsons Techno Remix by DJ Homer, at least that's what it is. I got it off Kazaa. I love Kazaa. I get so much crap off Kazaa. I get so much stuff that I can't get anywhere else. Screw the record companies, man. Well, I don't really, you know, very rarely I will get a new song, very rarely. But mostly I get stuff on Kazaa that I simply cannot get anywhere else. Not just music, but videos, little clips and things here and there. Just stuff I like getting. And God bless Kazaa. And I felt bad when Napster went down. And it was their own fault for having their servers inside the United States. That was their only the only problem that they had, because that allowed them to be taken over by the evil corporate entities of the record companies. Yeah, I know, I use that term a lot. I'm sorry. It's actually 2 days from the last segment. I was going to record a segment last night, but I just got tired. You know, I record this show after I come home from work, usually around 1 a.m. Right now it's like 1:30 a.m. on Friday. And I just finished. Like I say, I work from 3:30 in the afternoon until midnight. And I get a lift home, so it takes me only 15 minutes or so to get home. And then I eat, and I do my email and check my web pages and stuff like that. And if I have time, I'll record a segment. And if I'm up for it. You know, I can't do this when I'm tired. On time, I'll be like, George Bush sucks. So, you know, my wife is sitting there grinning as she's watching. She's laying down. She's had a bad day. She just had a real bad day today. She's not feeling real well, and she's been just basically up and down all day going to the bathroom. I wish there was something I can do to help her out, but unfortunately there isn't. I actually had a fairly decent day at work today. I think ever since we had that meeting, things have been kind of easing off, and I really don't know if they've just put pressure on our supervisor to stop being such a jerk or just the way things are. But it's been relatively easy the last two or three nights, which is okay. You know, I mean, it's been busy. I'm not saying that we've been sitting down all day. It's been busy, but it hasn't been crazy. And that's the way I like it at work. You know, I like it to be a little busy, but I don't like it to be just insane that I can't keep up with, you know, the things that are going on. And it's very difficult to try to keep up when they're hanging so many parts on the paint line that you just can't catch up to what they're doing. So it's been good enough the last couple of days to where we've been able to do that. I got a nasty paper cut, though. I hate paper cuts. I was picking up a piece of cardboard. We have pieces of cardboard that go in between certain parts. And just picking up, it didn't bleed. It was one of those things that was a deep cut, but it didn't bleed at all. I hate those. They're very annoying, and it still hurts a little bit. And it's just very annoying. And, you know, I put a bandage on it over at work because it's a dirty place. You know, it's a lot of steel dust and crap in the air. But I just wanted to protect it a little bit. But it didn't bleed. And it happened actually while my coworker was on a break, so I was there by myself. If it had been bleeding and bleeding badly, I just would have stopped the line and went and got a Band-Aid and taken care of it and let someone else go there and pick up the damn parts. I get a lot of little cuts and nicks. My wife can testify to this, too. All this little stuff all over my arms and hands and stuff like that. They've got arm guards that are actually made partly of Kevlar, which is the anti-bullet stuff that they use in bulletproof armor. But that's very cumbersome, and it's not always necessary for the job I do. But at any rate, one of the sites I read regularly is therightchristians.org, a very, very good website. I am not a Christian. My wife and I argue about religion from time to time. We argued about it last show a little bit, and I understand her feelings, and I respect her feelings. And fortunately, she respects my feelings, although she thinks I'm very misguided. I don't necessarily think she's misguided, but I just, you know, I understand her point of view. I just disagree with it, and I think that's important for all married couples. I think it's a good thing that a married couple will disagree on something from time to time, because people who agree on everything are no fun at all. And, yeah, boring is like my wife is saying, yeah. And nobody really likes that. So it actually puts – and us both being Italian, or at least she's part Italian, and I'm full-blooded Sicilian, whatever that means, we do tend to argue quite a bit. And arguments are good for marriage. Italians will tell you that fighting can be good for marriage. Not real, you know, fist fight and stuff like that, but, you know, arguments and getting things out in the open. That can be actually good for a marriage. But you got to be mature enough to handle it. Unfortunately for us, we're not. Neither my wife and I are particularly mature, are we? I'm the black sheep of the family who goes all this goofy internet stuff, while my relatives are all doing normal things and normal jobs and stuff like that, like my sister, who I love very much, but she's very much one of those people, you know, go to work, go home, take care of that sort of business. You know, she really wouldn't do anything frivolous like what I'm doing. Well, actually, that's not entirely true. She actually tried for a little while to be a stand-up comic, which was very interesting that she would attempt that. But it wasn't something I think that that she was going to continue on. Anyway, getting back to what I was talking about, and I know I ramble on about certain things, the right Christians. Now, one of the things that's going on, in fact, I brought it up in my blog a while ago, when the issue first came out, is the issue of gay marriage and same-sex unions, however you want to call it. But gay marriage is what's going to be used, because that's the words, those are the words that are going to be used to scare us and to scare people into thinking, oh, my God, you know, dogs and cats sleeping together, you know, fire and brimstone, all that's going to come on because we're allowing gays to get married. And, you know, Mr. Bush wants a constitutional amendment, a federal constitution amendment, that defines marriage as between a single man and a single woman. You know, that's supposedly the big traditional thing, and I'm going to get into that in a second. And other states, including my own state of Georgia, are having similar state constitutional amendments to ban homosexual marriages, basically making second-class citizens out of homosexuals. And it's interesting because I know some people who are homosexuals who are big supporters of George W. Bush, and it just boggles my mind why homosexuals or blacks or members of any minority would support George W. Bush. But anyway, on the right Christians, they've been discussing this from time to time, and they printed an excerpt from Rabbi Jeff Goldwasser, who is the head of the Beth Israel Temple in a temple in Massachusetts somewhere. I'm not sure where it is. But anyway, the rabbi was discussing the whole thing, and he is one of those who is against the constitutional amendment banning marriage. And I want to read some of what he had to say. He starts out, he says, I have been struck by the way of why proponents of amending the Constitution, the state constitution in this case, have tried to frame the debate. In other words, in their words, this conflict is about preserving an age-old traditional definition of marriage. They generally cite the Bible as the source of that definition. They say that this is about protecting children and pitting the values of religion and morality against the values of secular society. I wonder if any of those claims stand up to scrutiny. Now, House Speaker Thomas Finneran of Massachusetts said at the Constitutional Convention last month, which is the Constitutional Convention they had to determine this issue, excuse me. Oh, I hate it when those coughs come up. Hang on a second. I'm going to drink a water. Yes, welcome to professional show business. Anyway, Thomas Finneran said last month that marriage has been defined for thousands of years, his own words, as the union of one man and one woman. Representative Finneran needs a history lesson. In the time of the Bible, polygamous marriages, such as Jacob's marriage to Rachel and Leah, were accepted. And in the Bible, marriage was not so much a union as it was an acquisition. In the Bible's language, a man took a woman, or women. Women were taken as wives. In dozens of other areas, biblical marriage was unlike modern marriage. Fidelity worked only one way. Adultery in the Bible means only for a man to take another man's wife. Marriage was defined by race. In the books of Ezra and Nehemiah, marriage is exclusively limited to the union of two Israelites. All other marriages were null and void. Sorry, honey. We're not Israelites. Our marriage is null and void. She's shaking her head at me. Let's see. The book of Deuteronomy defines rules for a man to acquire as a wife a woman captured in battle. Contemporary Judaism and Christianity do not accept marriage as it is defined in the Bible. Both traditions over the centuries created new models in which both partners mutually assent to marriage and in which both partners are bound by oaths of fidelity. To claim a single traditional definition of marriage, as have the proponents of constitutional amendment, is to invent an idealized past and to deny thousands of years of change and adaptation that is ongoing. I'm still continuing with the rabbi's quotes. It's a long editorial, but I'm not going to read the whole thing. Some proponents of constitutional amendment also claim that same-sex marriage violates the Bible's denunciation of sexual relations between two men. The Bible, of course, says nothing about sexuality between two women. Indeed, Leviticus does say that for a man to lie with a man in the matter of lying with a woman is an abhorrence. And the Hebrew word is Toaeva, I hope I pronounced that correct. This is a strong condemnation, but it is not the only time the word is used in the Bible. Other practices were equally abhorrent to the Bible's culture of more than 2,000 years ago. The word toaeva is also used to describe eating shellfish, a woman wearing men's clothing, a man remarrying a woman he previously had divorced, and divining the future from signs, to name a few. I am certain that we will not be seeing proposed constitutional amendments to ban these abhorrences unless the Taliban opens up a lobbying office on Beacon Hill. And he wants, let me read this one more. I want to finish up with this. I like what he says here at the end, near the end, next to last paragraph. I respect the rights of those who do not recognize same-sex marriages as holy matrimony within their religious traditions. As a member of the clergy, I myself have refused to officiate at weddings that do not meet my religious standards. However, I would not seek to outlaw these marriages that I or my denomination will not solemnize. In a free society, no one religious perspective should be allowed to trample on the rights of others. The rabbi is, of course, a well-learned man, which, of course, is what a rabbi is, a learned man. Tevye from Fiddler on the Roof wanted to be a rabbi, so people would ask him really goofy questions. But I have a great deal of respect for all religious viewpoints until they get to the point where they start trying to push their beliefs into law. I believe in our secular society, and I believe in the First Amendment, which states very clearly that we shall not restrict anyone from worshiping God in their own way, but we will also not create a state religion. That is the essence of it. It's called the Establishment Clause of the Constitution, to say that we will not. And that's why, you know, I'm against organized prayer in schools and the posting of the Ten Commandments, because, you know, in government buildings, that is, because it's basically saying we are a Christian country, and from a constitutional point of view, we are not. Just because the majority of us are Christians doesn't necessarily make us a Christian nation. You do not, you know, Jefferson said that while the rule of the majority must always prevail, the minority rights must be respected, otherwise we go into tyranny. And that's the way I feel about it. I respect everybody's religion. I respect everybody's belief, and everybody has the right to believe what they believe in. But they don't have the right to codify it into law and to use the power of the state to coerce other people to worship in ways other than they desire to worship. I think that's wrong. So, at any rate, I want to thank the rabbi, and I want to thank the RightChristians.org for bringing this to my attention. They are a very good website, and they talk about the Reverend Allen. I forget his last name. What is his last name? Let me look about that. I keep forgetting his last name. I apologize. Reverend Brill, Allen H. Brill. He's a Lutheran minister. But the Reverend Brill is an outstanding spokesperson for Christians. I wish more Christians were like him. My wife is like the Reverend Brill. She's very understanding. She's very accepting of other people's beliefs. She still has her own beliefs, and I respect those, but I don't believe everything she believes. And we respect each other for that. The Reverend Brill also talks a lot about workers' issues, which is one of the things that brought me to his site in the first place. He talked about, you know, working conditions back a century ago and about how things are slowly working their way back in that direction, it seems. And that's very unfortunate. And it's unfortunate that a lot of working people in this country are allowing that. I was speaking, and getting onto this subject, I was speaking about this very thing with my coworker Dave, who is also a Christian and a very nice guy, the type of Christian I'm saying that the world needs more of. And we were discussing, you know, I'm joining the union, and I was discussing, you know, what I would like to do once I get into the union. I want to be more active than just being a union member. I would like to be a union representative, and I would like to work my way up the hierarchy if I can, so I can do more to help working people. The plant where I work, I am 90% certain, is going to be shutting down in the next 3 months, so they can move it all to Mexico. Pardon me. I am fairly certain of that. I'm not 100%, If I was 100%, maybe my attitude might change, but actually my work ethic doesn't really change one way or the other. I'm still going to work just as hard, or not just as hard, as I would if the plant was staying on. But I'm hoping that if I get involved with the union, that I might be able to get some work with the union, working for the union directly, or maybe with their influence, I might be transferred to another operation somewhere else. So we'll see what happens. The IBEW, which I will be a member of probably in a couple of weeks if all goes well, is a fairly large union. They're an AFL-CIO affiliate, as I've mentioned before. And I'm looking forward to being part of that and hoping that I can get it. But anyway, we were talking about what I would do. And Dave brought up the problem, which is basically the main problem that working people have in this country is that we're afraid to work together. We're afraid to stand up for our rights because everybody's worried about losing their job. You know, the economy is very bad right now. The market for work is very bad. I know a lot of people who are out of work. And in fact, what's scary is that the people, for the most part, who are working a lot of extra hours. A lot of people working 50, 60 hours a week. And that's just wrong. You know, I'm a big believer in the 40-hour work week because it gives you actually the time you need to enjoy the fruits of your labor. I mean, what good is making money if you're working so hard you never get a chance to enjoy it? And if the only type of future you have to pass on to your children is the same type of deal where they're just going to be spending their whole work lives working. I mean, some people are workaholics and stuff like that, and that's fine, and I respect that, but, you know, we're getting to the point where you kind of have to be a workaholic in order to just survive. And not all of us want to be that way. I'm one of those people who works to live, not the other way around. And I think a lot of people are really like that. And but one of the reasons that conditions for workers in America have gone down is because workers are afraid to stand up for themselves. Some of them have bought into all the BS from the right wing. And you're always going to get people who are going to get suckered into stuff like that. My wife is always complaining that she used to think a certain way until she met me and, you know, I don't want to say straightened her out, but that I gave her an opposing or alternate viewpoint from what she had been hearing. But, you know, there's a lot of people out there who simply buy into the BS. And they're still buying into the BS. You know, I'm still convinced, Unless something happens otherwise, that Mr. Bush is going to be, I don't want to say reelected, but he's going to get another 4 years, and that scares me. I can't imagine what's going to happen in this country after another 4 years of this guy. And it's been pretty bad to begin with, you know. So, but you know, it's going to be a tight election again, and it really shouldn't be. I mean, the man has no record to run on. I mean, it's been a disaster. Everything that's happened has been a disaster. Even 9/11, which boosted his popularity, was something he could have avoided. I mean, I'm not going to get into the whole thing about whether they knew everything that was going to happen was going to happen, but the fact of the matter is that the Clinton people at the end had a very strong anti-terrorism stance, and they had a lot of things that they wanted to do that they didn't do because they were changing over, and they were very intent on letting the Bush administration know that this is important, that you must pay attention to this, because Osama bin Laden and terrorism are going to be the biggest problems they were going to be facing in the next 4 years. And they just kind of like, yeah, whatever. And they kind of let it slide. And they were only just beginning to talk about that when 9/11 happened. And, of course, Mr. Bush wasted no time in politicizing the event for his own gain. I mean, it's just remarkable. Anybody who speaks out, even today, 2-3 years after the fact, anybody who speaks out against Mr. Bush is all of a sudden painted as un-American. I'm not having anybody tell me I'm un-American, buddy. I'm a very proud American. I'm a veteran. I've served this country overseas. And I come from a family of veterans. And I'm a proud patriot. But I'm not a nationalist. You know, there's a difference between being a patriot and being a naturalist. And I am not nationalist. Excuse me. I am not a nationalist. I believe America is the greatest nation on earth, but I do not believe that America has the right to force its will illegally on other nations simply because we have the strongest military power in the world. I think that's wrong, and I think in doing so, we damn ourselves, and we condemn ourselves to the fate of all other past empires. The Roman Empire, the Athenian Empire, the Ottoman Empire all eventually fell simply because they built themselves up only on military, and didn't really do anything. When America has been successful, America has been successful with its culture, with the idea that people have the right to have fun and to be free and to choose the life that they want. And other countries, of course, react to that because a lot of other countries are bound by old traditions and don't want to change or find it difficult to change. And we didn't have that because we were a relatively new country, and we still are a relatively new country, only a couple hundred years old. So we don't have quite the history, but we're getting there. And I'm beginning to think that we're due for a smackdown. And I hope, if and when it happens, that more people, you know, a lot of people aren't badly affected by it, because we really, most Americans really don't deserve that sort of treatment, what's going to happen to us if we continue on the path that we're giving. But we're going to get it whether we like it or not. And part of the reason is because we're apathetic about our government and working together as a larger community. So, anyway, let's not get into all that stuff. Let's go on. Let's have a few more songs, and we'll be back to finish everything up right here on the Cup of Joe radio show.
Run away! Run away! Run away! Run away!
Right, how many did we lose?
Gawain,
Hector, and Bors, that's five.
Fleeter,
three. We better not risk another frontal assault. That rabbit's dynamite.
Would it help to confuse it if we run away more?
Oh, shut up and go and change your armor.
Let us taunt it. It may become so cross that it will make a mistake.
Like what?
Well,
have we got bows?
No.
We have the holy hand grenade.
Yes, of course. The holy hand grenade of Antioch. It is one of the sacred relics Brother Maynard carries with him. Brother Maynard, bring up the holy hand grenade.
Jesu Domine, dona eis requiem. Jesu Domine, dona eis requiem.
How does it, work?
I know not, my liege.
Consult the Book of Armaments.
Armaments, chapter 2, verses 9 to 21.
And St. Attila raised the hand grenade up on high, saying, O Lord, bless this thy hand grenade, that with it thou mayst blow thine enemies to tiny bits in thy mercy. And the Lord did grin, and the people did feast upon the lambs, and sloths, and carp, and anchovies, and orangutans, and breakfast cereals, and fruit bats, and large...
Give a bit, brother.
And the Lord spake, saying, First shalt thou take out the holy pin, then shalt thou count to three, no more, no less. Three shall be the number thou shalt count, and the number of the counting shall be three. Four shalt thou not count, neither count thou two, excepting that thou then proceed to three. Five is right out. Once the number three, being the third number, be reached, then lobbest thou thy holy hand grenade of Antioch towards thy foe, who, being not in my sight, shall snuff it.
Amen.
Amen. Amen. Right. One, two, five.
Peter.
Three.
We're here on the beach where a giant shark has just eaten a girl swimmer. Well, Mr. Jaws, how was it?
Dynamite!
And what did she say when you grabbed her?
Please, Mr. Please.
I know sharks are stupid, but what did you think when you took that first bite?
How sweet it is.
Mr. Jaws, before you swim out to sea, have you anything else to say?
Why can't we be friends?
With me now is the local sheriff. Sheriff Brody... The shark will be back for lunch. What do you intend to do? Just arriving is oceanographer Matt Hooper. Sir, if someone is attacked by a shark, what should they do? We're going aboard the fishing boat of Captain Quint. Captain, will you be able to catch this giant shark?
I will.
Thank you, Captain. Captain, when you catch one of these sharks, what do you feel like?
Like a rhinestone cowboy.
We've just sighted the shark again. He's coming straight for us. Captain Quint is shouting something at him.
Get your baby one of these nights.
Hey, by Jaws. The captain says he's going to catch you. What do you think of that? Uh-oh, here he comes again. They've hit him. Mr. Jaws, why doesn't anything seem to hurt you? He's coming right onto the boat. Mr. Jaws, why are you grabbing my hand?
Wouldn't you give your hand to a friend?
No, wait. Mr. Jaws, that's not the way this record is supposed to end. Help! Help!
Back when I was a kid, life was going swell. Till something happened, blew everything to hell. That night my daddy stumbled in, all pale and weak. Said a woman up the block just gave birth to a geek. Mom said, sell it to the circus. What the heck? Dad said, nope, this one's a pencil man. And if there's one thing lower than a sideshow freak, it's a gritty, scum-sucking, pencil-neck geek. You see, if you take a pencil that won't hold lead, looks like a pipe cleaner attached to a head, add a buggy-whip body with a brain that leaks, you got yourself a grit-eating, pencil-neck geek. Pencil-neck geek, grit-eating freak, scum-sucking peahead with a lousy physique. He's a one-man, no-cut, losing streak. Nothing but a pencil-neck geek.
Pencil-neck geek.
Soon the geeks were popping up all over town. You couldn't hardly sneeze without knocking one down. After a nice juicy steak, if you need a toothpick, just reach for a geek. They'll do the trick. One day we cut one up for fish bait. Learned our lesson just a little bit late. Soon as the geek hit the drink, the water turned red. Next day, sure enough, all the fish were dead. Pencil neck geek, gritty freak, scum sucking peahead with a lousy physique. He's a one man, no good losing streak. Nothing but a pencil neck geek. Any night, you know where I can be found. Yeah, stomping some geeks head into the ground. So keep the faith, cause in Blassie you can trust. I won't give up till the last geek bites the dust. Pencil neck geek, gritty freak, scum sucking peahead with a lousy physique. He's a one man, no gun losing streak. Nothing but a pencil neck geek. They say these geeks come a dime a dozen. I'm looking for the guy who's supplying the dimes. It's gonna be real hard times for all of these grit-eating, scum-sucking, boot-licking, drop-kicking, gut-grinding, nail-biting, glue-sniffing, scab-picking, butt-scratching, egg-hatching, sleazy, smelly, pepper-belly, dirty, lousy, rotten, stinking freaks. Nothing but a pencil-neck geek.
Pencil-neck.
That was Classy Freddie Blassie with Pencil Neck Geek. Fred Blassie made his name as a pro wrestler and did that song. That was from his song, from his album, I Bite the Songs. And Blassie was known in the wrestling community for biting people on the forehead. I remember that. Before that, we had Dickie Goodman, Blast from the Past, Mr. Jaws. That was popular in the late 70s when I was younger and listening to the radio. And I used to wait for that to come on because I knew all the songs in it. And we opened up with Monty Python and the Holy Hand Grenade for all those religious people who are attempting to use the Constitution to ban gay marriages. We hope to loft at them the Holy Hand Grenade. How you doing? This is the Cup of Joe Radio Show, show number 15. I am your host, Joe Vecchio. You know, last episode when we came back after a three-month absence, I forgot to do something. I forgot to read from democraticunderground.com, the top 10 conservative idiots. And this is episode number 146. So here we go. The Bush administration appears to have a cunning plan for this year's election. First, they're going to scare the crap out of you. Then they're going to tell you that they're the only people that can keep you safe. I guess they realize this tactic works pretty good for wife beaters, so it's a good fit for the Republican Party. Now, back in January 2002, George W. Bush told leaders of both parties that when it comes to 9/11, I have no ambition whatsoever to use this as a political issue. I guess this was another one of his famous flubs. What he actually meant to say was, I have no ambition whatsoever, let's use this as a political issue. Relatives of the 9/11 victims and members of the International Association of Firefighters, not to mention anyone with a sense of decency, were shocked last week when Bush's first election campaign ads rolled out. Knightsbridge newspapers described the ads as featuring the smoldering wreckage of the Twin Towers of the World Trade Center with a flag flying in the rubble. Another ad shows firefighters carrying a flag-draped stretcher. Said one relative of a 9/11 victim, using my dead friends and my dead brother for political expediency is dead wrong. It's wrong, it's bad taste, and an insult to the 3,000 people who died on September 11th. Now, the weird thing is, the Bush campaign is trying to play this off like it makes Bush look better. The general theme of the ads is steady leadership in time of change, which is pretty friggin' bizarre if you consider the fact that we were doing okay until President Dunce fell asleep at the wheel. And speaking of images of flag-draped stretchers, you've got to admire the way Bush rolls out corpses whenever it's convenient. You may have noticed that there's been no media coverage of the bodies of American service people returning from Iraq. That's because back in December 2003, the Pentagon told the families of troops who had been killed in action that we're going to do everything in our power to ensure reverence for their fallen loved ones. Fair enough. But they probably should have added, if it's politically expedient to do so. On the other hand, if a flag-draped stretcher can be used in a way that will make George Bush look like a hero instead of a warmongering buffoon, then we're all for it. So what does firefighter Tommy Fee of Rescue Squad 270 in Queens think about Bush's World Trade Center campaign ads? It's as sick as people who stole things out of the place, he said. Sorry, George, but I think I'm with Tommy on this one. I agree. And, of course, if you need more evidence of Bush's two-faced approach to 9/11, ask yourself this. Why would Bush want to glorify his 9/11 achievements in order to prop up his claims of strong and steady leadership and then attempt to hamstring the panel which is investigating what happened on that day? According to the New York Times, the 9/11 Commission is refusing to accept strict conditions from the White House for interviews with President Bush and Vice President Dick Cheney. Now, Bush and Dick were insisting that they should only be interviewed for 1 hour and only by two members of the panel. So what the hell is going on here? On the one hand, you've got an ad campaign which uses 9/11 to tout great leaders' strong, steady leadership. And on the other hand, you've got our great leader doing everything he can to make sure the 9/11 Commission doesn't find out what it needs to know. This is supposed to make our country safer. Oh, and by the way, it's worth noting that Bill Clinton and Al Gore have already scheduled meetings with the full panel without time constraints. Just a reminder of what real strong, steady leadership looks like. Now, some conservative shills are actually coming right out and saying what the Bush administration doesn't want to admit, that the only way for them to retain the White House this year is through terrorizing the voters. In a recent column, former political consultant Dick Morris lays out what Bush needs to do to beat Kerry. The economy? Forget it. Positive ads? Ha! What Bush needs to do, according to Morris, is to make Americans understand that the war on terror is still atop our national agenda. He needs to elevate the sense of threat so that his advantage as a war president begins to count. Yeah, if George Bush wants to win, he's going to have to do a better job of scaring the crap out of Americans. Is that a series of orange alerts I see on the horizon? And if it still isn't clear that the Republicans are focusing on scaring people into voting for them because they have nothing else to run on this year, here's yet another example. At a speech to the Canadian County Republican Convention last week, Republican Congressman Tom Cole said, I promise you this, If George Bush loses the election, Osama bin Laden wins the election. It's that simple. It will be interpreted that way by enemies of the United States around the world. What do you think Hitler would have thought if Roosevelt would have lost the election in 1944? He would have thought American resolve was weakening. Now, Senator Cole, is it Senator Cole? No. I don't know. Senator Cole defended the comments on his website, saying, "I never said, and I do not believe, that a vote against President Bush is equivalent to a vote for Adolf Hitler." Okay, fair enough. So you only compare John Kerry to Osama bin Laden. Well, I guess that's just dandy. Is this really the best the Republicans can do? I guess running on Bush's record on the economy, Iraq, education, jobs, and the environment are all out. Yep, better stick with the fear-mongering instead. Although when it comes to national security, I think I'd rather take a genuine war hero over an incoherent AWOL chicken hawk who didn't stop drinking until he was 40 years old. Just our personal opinion. Now, while the Republicans will be running on fear this year, the Democrats will be running on, well, if they aren't, the Republican National Committee has its way, you won't find out. The Republicans are in the process of pressuring the FEC, the Federal Elections Commission, into creating new regulations which will severely curtail the fundraising and spending activities of anti-Bush organizations. But the lack of any decision by the FEC has so far hasn't stopped the RNC from sending letters to around 250 TV stations urging them not to run the ads by advocacy group MoveOn.org. The letters say in part that the stations have a responsibility to the viewing public and to your licensing agency to refrain from complicity in any illegal activity. Never mind that the FEC hasn't yet given in to RNC pressure to come up with new regulations. So while Team Bush will be free to spend $200 million this year saturating the airwaves with tall tales of Bush's strong, steady leadership, oh, and don't forget, vote Republican or you're all going to die, people who don't support Bush are in danger of finding themselves hard-pressed to respond, all because of the strong-arm tactics of the Republican National Committee. Let's recap. Scare the crap out of the American people. Check. Hobble the investigation into 9/11. Check. Compare John Kerry to Osama bin Laden. Check. Make backdoor deals to ensure that a democratic response is regulated out of existence. Check. Try to silence MoveOn.org by telling TV stations that their ads are illegal. Check. And now we're all just waiting for the Republicans to tell us that Democrats will do anything to win. Now, Dick Cheney has been echoing the sentiments of our great leader recently, adding his support to a constitutional amendment banning gay marriage. One might think that since Cheney's own daughter is gay, it would be fair to ask him what she thinks of his decision. Said he, "One of the most unpleasant aspects of this business is the extent of which private lives are intruded upon when these kinds of issues come up." Aha! Well, indeed. How inconvenient it is for people when their private lives are intruded by, say, folks who want to, I don't know, change the friggin' Constitution to discriminate against them? Way to go, Dick. You know, I'm sure living in an old nuclear bunker gives Mr. Cheney the illusion that this is still 1953, but perhaps if he stuck his head out a bit more often, he'd realize that the rest of America is living in the 21st century. Now, it was noted quite some time ago that the Bush administration has big plans to create 2.6 million jobs. That's about 220,000 new jobs a month. They got up to a roaring start this year, creating 112,000 jobs. And it looks like February has been a real barn burner month with 21,000 new jobs created. I guess those tax cuts for the rich are really kicking in now, especially when you consider that not a single one of those 21,000 jobs created in February were private sector jobs. That's right, they're all the result of hiring by the government. So that's no new private sector jobs in February, and the government's getting bigger. You just can't beat Bush's strong, steady leadership. Now, last week was Super Tuesday, and computer glitches by Diebold Company's electronic voting plague U.S. voters. This is from a report from the U.K. Guardian. Frozen screens and malfunctioning computers plagued some voters who tried to cast electronic votes in the Super Tuesday contest to win the Democratic nomination for this year's U.S. presidential election. Yep, 21st century voting caused all kinds of problems from San Diego to Maryland as the machines rioted. Some people were even had to leave and go to different polling places where they cast their ballots on paper. Oh, paper, how undignified. So as we leave the nightmare of hanging chads behind, rest assured that in 2004, our new system of electronic machines, which freeze, fail to boot, show the wrong candidates on the screen, don't produce a paper trail, and are easily susceptible to foul play, will be so much better. And finally, it looks like U.S. Solicitor General Ted Olson has just figured out what most of the rest of America figured out long, long ago, that there's porn on the Internet. Amusingly, Olson realized what was going on after he typed free porn into a search engine and got 6 million hits. And now he wants to, you get it, you guessed it, crack down. The only problem is that according to the American Civil Liberties Union, the law under which Olson wants to rid the world of pornography also criminalizes a depiction or description of nudity, or even a description of the female breast. But, says Olson, porn is as easily available to children as a television remote. So, maybe parents should pay the same attention to what their children are looking at on the Internet as what they're watching on television. I don't know. After all, you wouldn't plop your kids down unattended in front of the Spice Channel for a few hours on Saturday night. Why would you hand them the keys to the world's biggest and most discreet dirty bookstore? On an interesting side note, this report also officially marks Ted Olson as the last man in America to type free porn into an Internet search engine. And thank you from the people from DemocraticUnderground.com for this nice filler material that takes up a good amount of space. That was a good 12 minutes worth there. I want to thank everybody for helping me with the computer, Eric, and I want to thank Don for letting me use his computer while the computer was down. I did this last week, but I'm doing it again to show that I'm still a very grateful person. And that's going to be it for this show. I hope you enjoyed it, and I will be back again in a couple of days, hopefully. Bye.
I was walking down the street on a sunny day. Hubba, 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 hubba. A feeling in my bones says I have my way. Hubba, 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 hubba. Oh, I'm a happy boy.
Happy boy.
I'm a happy boy.
Happy boy.
Oh, ain't it good when things are going your way. Hey, hey. Yeah, my little dog Spot got hit by a car. Hubba, 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 hubba. Put his guts in a box and put him in a drawer. Hubba, 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 hubba. Oh, I'm a happy boy.
Happy boy.
Oh, I'm a happy boy.
Happy boy.
Oh, ain't it good when things are going your way. Hey, hey. Forgot all about it for a month and a half. Hubba, 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 hubba. I looked in the drawer and started to laugh. Hubba, 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 hubba. Cause I'm a happy boy.
Happy boy.
Oh, I'm a happy boy.
Happy boy.
Oh, ain't it good when things are going your way. Hey, hey. Ba 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 ba